everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind. WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. Ideas. Things to think about. Well, here it is. It's starting right about now. You're being flooded with a lot of information about the effects of 9/11, five-year anniversary coming up, if you could call it an anniversary, 5 years later. And here we is. Here we are, having gone through this. You remember a little recently we had Dr. Neil Schachter from the pulmonary department at Mount Sinai Hospital here teaching us a little about breathing and about, well, recently, just the last couple of days, Mount Sinai Medical Center, the rehab, the very same one, the pulmonary division, started releasing health studies, the largest health study yet, of the thousands of workers who labored at Ground Zero, shows the impact of rescue and recovery effort on their health has been more widespread and persistent than previously thought. About 3 years ago, I remember reading one report saying that there was a significant amount of lung damage and it should be cleared up soon. Now what we're seeing is 70% of the 10,000 workers tested at Mount Sinai reported that they had new or substantially worsened respiratory problems, and for many of them, like sinusitis and asthma and other things like that, gastrointestinal problems related to it, many of them, it looks like, are going to be sick forever. Yes, it looks like, according to the pulmonary people, the cleansing is going to take forever. Now, maybe that's just using the pure medical model that they use up at Mount Sinai. I am sure Majid Ali would have something to say about different ways that you could really help clean it up a little faster. Maybe, I think I heard him talking about glutathione and other ways that are really lung recovers. But the information, the thing that's really important here is that the long-range effects of 9/11 were much bigger than people imagined. And today what I want to focus on is the long-range psychological effects. What about the mind? As you're beginning to learn about this, you're going to be finding, they're going to be talking about physical problems, both of the people who were in the middle of it, and then of the people who weren't there, the physical effects, the effects that it might have had. See, for everybody, whatever problem you had before 9/11, it probably was exacerbated, which means made greater, after 9/11. So if, let's say, you had garden variety worries, and you were a worrying kind of person before 9/11, well, after 9/11, you're certainly going to be more worrying, because the thing that seemed to happen to just about everybody was a tremendous increase in the generalized anxiety level. So if you take somebody who's a worrier and you increase their anxiety, they're going to worry a lot more. They could go from worrying to phobia or to paranoia. You could just, if you add a little juice to it, you know. So 9/11 and post-9/11 responses, including, you have to keep in mind what happened, 9/11, not itself, not just the event, but then the year that followed and the years that followed of our governmental terrorism on the people with all the alerts, you know, getting you to tape your windows and watch out for all the dangers and over again, orange alert and green alert and purple alert, you know, to scare you. So over and over again, people were being frightened as we were justifying our preparedness to go into Iraq and Afghanistan. So if you had worries before, if you were a little cautious before, more likely you're more cautious now. And it kind of walks around with you somewhere in the back of your head. And as the anniversary approaches, as 9/11 approaches Monday, you can see if your sleeplessness, if your unease, if something begins happening to you unconsciously, it means that you're probably carrying it around, still carrying it with you, and it may be impairing you. Now, I say that 9/11 had a negative effect on practically everybody, but it didn't on everybody, long-range psychological effect. It was a tragedy. But the long-range other effects that are positive were that people band together, families pulled together, people who are feeling half-heartedly about their own relationships, in some cases started to bond together in a new way. Now, it may not be totally psychologically healthy, but they did make commitments to relationships. They are more patient with each other. You learn to become more patient with people around you because we're all in it together. If you had job problems before 9/11, 9/11 exacerbated the job problems. If you had, you would have been shaken on a whole bunch of different levels. Trauma exacerbates, which means makes larger, emotional fragility. Whatever emotional fragility you had, it got worse after 9/11. So let's say your emotional fragility is that you can't cry. You know, and I think men who can't cry, they can't shed a tear, I think it's an emotionally fragile state of mind. Because it means that they've got to run away from it all the time. You know, they can't be too attached to anything, because if they lose their attachment, they can't cry. They can't let their eyes sweat, you know. You know, your eyes sweat when your heart is working hard. And so that's what the tears are for. And men who can't cry, who I believe are handicapped, are in some way, you know, later, it gets worse. Because if you're a little cold before 9/11, you were colder after 9/11. You became like a solid trunk, you know. You became like an atrophied tree. How may you be shaken? Well, relationships. The two things happened in the trauma, right? There was a lot of people started moving for security. And many people, believe it or not, moved out of town. They just dropped it here and they went and bought a piece of property somewhere upstate. And they just got out of town real quickly. You know, and then they left their places behind. And now, of course, the prices of everything in New York increased so much that they couldn't come back if they wanted to. But they did. Many people abandoned their things here in New York, saying, ah, it's New York. So that's one thing, consequences that happen, changes of lifestyle. For some people, that was good, moving up to the country, making a little more peaceful life. But for people who did it out of that kind of fear, their fear probably went with them. Extramarital affairs, believe it or not, extramarital affairs increased after 9/11. 9/11 was an interesting thing. Before 9/11, there was a growing caution about sex, if you remember. In the year 2000 and the year 1999, people were getting more and more scared of AIDS. And so they were holding back from sex. They were not having sex. A lot of people were just saying, you know, we're going to even allow ourselves to be virgins until we get married. Well, what happens to, what do you think happens to a flower when it thinks it's going to die? When a flower thinks it's going to die, it sends out extra flowers. It opens up. It tries to have sex. It looks for pollen. Because it believes that it's going to die, so it's going to try to get something so that it could pass on to another generation. Well, believe it or not, there was a rampant explosion of sexual activity around people. And some of it just, you know, to make contact, but much of it driven by, I believe, unconscious biological imperatives. You know, we think we're in danger, so we better do something. If you include the Iraq War, the divorce rate increased tremendously, and especially among soldiers who went into Iraq, the officers have an alarmingly high divorce rate, something like 70% versus the 50% in our general nation. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Yes, I talk about psychology, and we talk about psychology every day, because you got to learn about your mind. You got to learn about people's mind, not just your own. You know, looking at your own navel's pretty good, but being able to understand the behavior of other people around you that you don't understand, that's the really best part. A report from the United Kingdom, I love we call it the United Kingdom, England, Great Britain. What do you call it when you live in Britain? Where are you from? I'm from England? Or they say I'm from the United Kingdom. I think they say I'm from England. But from the United Kingdom, the Daily Mail, by Zoe Brennan, gives a report, The Curse of the 9/11 Widows. Listen to this one. The grieving wives of people in 9/11 got millions of dollars because they were survivor to or widowed to someone who died. Now, how they gave out the money was very interesting. They took a percentage. It was kind of like insurance. It was almost like we took the amount of money you were earning at any given point in your life. So let's say you earned $25,000. And then they multiplied that by the number of supposed good earning years you had. So if you were 30 years old, they figured by 65 you'd be retired. So you had 35 good earning years. And then they multiplied that by the $25,000 you were earning, adding a little additional for pay increases. And they came out with a sum. The lowest sum was around $250,000. Now, if you were somebody who was earning a lot of money, you got millions of dollars from this fund that was out there. So these are from people directly involved, especially, you know, it was for people who were firefighters lost a lot, and policemen lost a lot of their lives, but they were low pay. I mean, relatively low income people, relatively, compared to a lot of the other people who were working in the buildings. Now, the grieving wives got millions of dollars, and many of them, this money would destroy their lives once again. You would imagine once their life got destroyed, their mate, right, was killed in the attack. But what would happen is once they had this money, it attracted jealous and resentful relatives, making them even more depressed. So imagine you're depressed, you get all this money, and your relatives hate you for having this thing, because your husband died, they wish their husband would die so they could get some money. And so a lot of resentment, a lot of jealousy. And then some of them people, because they were so shaken up and given this money without any real guidance, they became squandering, spendaholic widows. Payouts, this payout was fueling their addictions. So whatever minor addiction they may have had, whether it be shopping or alcohol or drugs or whatever it is, now with all this money they could have as much cocaine as they wanted, as much whatever they wanted. Because the addiction was trying to replace the lost husband, you see. So you get a drug and you try to make the drug make you feel calm. So now you have all the money to get it. The cash windfall that many of these people got also would attract others' husbands who wanted to cash in on the money that they had received. So then, for example, I'm not sure about firefighters, but I would imagine if one firefighter lost his life, his wife got money, one of the other people that she would have known, another man, even if he was married, would have been very attracted to her to try to get his hands on that money. Because not many people get a chance to marry a desperate millionaire's. You know, if you see somebody who's destitute, who's lost somebody, you give them some sympathy and hopefully they're going to marry you. And suddenly you've gone from somebody who works every day and works hard to somebody who's sitting, you know, with a cash cow. It's kind of a beautiful thing. So you're attracted to it. So then they had this, there's a lot of exploitation going on. And speaking about exploitation, do you understand that all of the people who got money were given the money with the condition, only with the condition, that they can never sue the government or the airlines for any wrongdoings? That they just couldn't. So it was kind of blood money. You know, in a way. This is Armand DeMille with you with A Positive Mind. We're looking for some of the effects, the long-range effects of 9/11 on many people. The American Psychology Today, said that in general, when doing a survey among the 5 years, they found an increase in generalized anxiety disorder, an increase in sleep disorders. Sleep disorders, which you would imagine. Now, that would make sense. because the amygdala, this little part of the brain that sits there to get it ready to wake you up whenever it perceives danger, is sitting out there and it's getting ready to wake you up. It's going to get you up any minute now if you need to. You know? Well, it gets heightened. And so what happens is you're more readily awakened. And you get wakened more with this kind of energy that's saying something's wrong, something's wrong, something's wrong, something's wrong. So the amygdala would be on high tension and would be triggering nightmares, sleeplessness. Now, give somebody enough sleeplessness and they can't sleep as well. I'll ask you. I mean, you're a listener. Do you sleep as well now as you did in 2005 and 2000? And many of you are going to say, no, I don't. That suggests that somehow, unconsciously, there's been an effect on you that you are still living with. Other experiences were that we was called a major number of people post-traumatic stress disorder, exactly what it means. The symptoms of which are the same, you know, nightmares, shaking, unable to really perform, a kind of a deep depression and despair. There's a city's leading mental health referral line. It's called LifeNet. LifeNet, in the a recent report, they said they averaged 3,000 calls a month before 2001. Now they are averaging 8,000 a month, meaning that there are more than twice as many people calling for help and referrals now than there were before 2001. They said the amount was up as high as 12,000 directly after it, meaning people were just feeling the effects. Anxiety. Well, anxiety seems to be the key of what has kind of changed the most. More anxiety generally is a feeling, and therefore a greater tendency for people to want to feel stabilized. And what do you think has happened? A tremendous increase in the amount of prescription antidepressants to people who couldn't get things out of their minds. So psychiatrists are giving these antidepressants, and the growth in the amount of Prozac that has been prescribed over the last 5 years is like you couldn't have a better condition. For the drug companies, I mean, the drug sales are up tremendously because people flock to their psychiatrist. Even if they went to their therapist and they tried to get insurance, the managed care companies would send you to a psychiatrist and get you rather give you medication than have you talk to somebody about it. And the result of it is the medication is there and it keeps you somewhat calm, but it keeps you jittery because you never really had a chance to talk to anybody about it. Five-year anniversaries are very funny times. You know, 5 years are significant events. And at 5 years, you get a chance to see, at the five-year anniversary of anything, you really get a chance to see what your connection is to it. More than a four-year anniversary, a five-year anniversary tends to exacerbate problems. It tends to bring them up right to the front. That's according to a lot of a theory that we have. Maybe it's true, maybe it's not. Disaster psychiatrist, yes, there is a disaster psychiatrist, Dr. Edward Cantor from the University of Virginia, he says increased vigilance is normal. When it keeps you from functioning in the rest of your life, when you can't work, when you have to take days off, when you can't have a romance, when you can't have a relationship with somebody, when it affects you in some way, he said, then it becomes pathological. Then it has to be addressed. Increased vigilance, he would say, would be natural. A little nervousness. Not a bad thing. Alexandra Kennedy, the bereavement specialist, Dr. Alexandra Kennedy, is the one who focused on the five-year anniversary and the different ways that these problems manifest. This is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind. We're going to be taking your calls in a little bit to hear from you whether or not you think 9/11 has affected you on a long-term basis in your own psychological health. Please, let's not talk about the war in Iraq. Let's talk about you, even though I could probably spend days talking about it. One other bit of information, and this one is very interesting. During the time of 9/11, during the immediately following it, the American Red Cross got a tremendous amount of money to provide services to people who had psychological problems related to 9/11. The description of it is the funds are available to assist patients for treatment of mental health symptoms and conditions that are either directly caused or exacerbated by the events of September 11, 2001. Now, this is very interesting. So in other words, the American Red Cross is saying, we'll pay for everybody's therapy. I mean, if you had a condition, and I'm saying if you had any condition before 9/11, it probably got exacerbated by 9/11. I can make an easy case for practically everybody's disorder. You know, if you were phobic, you became more phobic. If you were anxious, you became more anxious. If you were depressed, you became more depressed. Therefore, there may be funds available to all of you to go dig up your receipts and send them to the American Red Cross if you could somehow have a diagnosis that says, yes, we believe it was exacerbated by 9/11, or those of you who haven't gotten treatment can get treatment now. Now, it's not as complicated as you think. You call the American Red Cross. They will send you, I think you could even look it up on the Internet. The Mental Health Association of New York also works with the American Red Cross. So it's going to, you could apply for benefits, and then the benefits are delivered any one of two ways. One of the ways they're delivered is they will either pay the therapist directly, or you pay the therapist and they'll pay you back. But they're not paying small amounts of money. They're paying as much as $126 for a social worker, $150 for a psychologist. So they're paying top fee back, but they ask you, of course, to try to help them, that if you're getting some money through insurance, that that be deducted. So you could contact the American Red Cross and the Mental Health Association of New York. It does cover therapy with physicians, psychologists, social workers, marriage and family counselors, nurse practitioners, certified alcoholism and substance abuse counselors, board-certified art therapists. And it's kind of amazing. I mean, it's amazing that it's out there and it's available. Many of you think you can't afford to see a therapist or even a psychiatrist. Maybe you can. Maybe this money is available to you if you search it out. Don't call me for the information. Go to the American Red Cross on your Internet or get a phone number for them and call it up. I don't see a phone number here. Do you see a phone number in here for the American Red Cross? This is Armand DeMille talking to you with a positive mind. Now, one of the other things we're going to do before we take your calls today is to talk about the positive effects. I want to ask you about your own positive effects. Did you have any positive effects to the trauma? I mean, what positive effects could it have been? What could it have been that you, maybe you were flirting with leaving your relationship. Maybe you were. And then suddenly this happened and you found that you cared more than you thought you did. That's a real possibility. And so you made a recommitment to your relationship. A lot of fledgling relationships, early relationships that were early on, they really formed a real bond at that point, too, as well. Well, we'll see. We're going to hear from you. Telephone number here is 212-209-2900. It's the beginning of our program here at WBAI covering 9/11 and what happened. Just for your own records, on 9/11 and 9/12, WBAI will be doing very special programming on both days, which is Monday and Tuesday, regarding the anniversary of 9/11. So what I would like you to do, so I won't be with you that day. This is my contribution today to explore what is happening. I'll be back with you on Wednesday the 13th. 212-209-2900. We're going to start taking your calls any minute now, then we'll take a little break, and then we'll come back with more calls. Do you have to dig up a phone number there? 212-209-2900. And I'll give out the American Red Cross number a little later. We'll find it for you. Hi, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille.
Hi, Armand. just to let you know that you were very influential to me at that time. Because you came on the air, and I think, I don't know if it was the following day, and you said, in which way have you been a terrorist of the people in your life? Do you recall that?
I sure do.
And what happened was that I began examining me and my relationships, and I began thinking, what is terror? What is it in the way that I deal with others that wouldn't be kind and loving and acceptable? And all I can tell you is that I was already in a process of kind of dealing with my own stuff and reading and kind of changing. But that was very impacting for me. And I sat with my family, with all those that I could, and thought, this is not only the outsiders. We internally, what are we doing to each other? In which way are we hurting and harming and not even being responsible for what we say and do?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned it, because that's where I was going to go a little later in the program.
So thank you.
You know, what's your name again?
Luce.
Luce, I want to thank you, because I remember it really touched my heart, 9/11. I remember what happened. WBAI was bombed out. I mean,
yeah,
they
what
couldn't
I did
broadcast.
Do, what I did do in a positive way, too, is that I went there as a rescuer, because I'm a nurse. I went down as a rescuer, and I stayed there until the 17 in the morning when they said there was no more rescue, that it was recovery now. Then I left. Mm. But the first days, I was there.
You were there, and what happened to the station? The station wasn't there, so we moved up to my office in New York, and we were broadcasting from up here.
Yes.
I remember it was the only place available. But
yes,
to be able to get on the air after that and to be able to say everything we said when the world was panicking was quite a difference. Luce, I want to thank you. How about your own physical effects of having
been
there?
Well, I was discussing it with my daughter just before. My two daughters and I went. I went by myself the following day, and then on Thursday I took Jeannie, and then I took Sharon from Friday all the way until Monday. And we all, in January, ended up with the worst bronchitis possible. But after that, only Sharon has had kind of sequela, like more things, like every winter she has gotten a very, very, very cold in the last year, it was really bronchitis, very bad. And I was telling her, you know, go and have yourself checked. It may be, because I didn't make the connection either. Mm-hmm. What it had to do with that?
Yeah, so the Mount Sinai program, and I kind of know some of the people up there. It's a good place to try to get some services.
Yeah, and I thought she should, at least just for her own peace of mind, to just go and really see. Because myself and my younger daughter, we don't have any anymore. I thought I was going to die. I had never felt so bad, the fever and the aching, and it was more respiratory than anything.
And when you were down there, did you feel that fever and the aching while you were there, while you
no,
were working?
No. The very first day, all I had, I ended up with tons and tons of water. That's the only thing that was available. And unbeknownst to me, this woman came and said to me, I have food. I am in Stuyvesant High School. Just give me people to bring it to you. And I turned around, and there was these five black SUVs that later I found out that they belonged to Giuliani. And I said, could you go with this woman and bring me food for the workers there? And they sent tons and tons of rolls, but they couldn't pack the whole like anything of substance to give them, but they send Twinkies and just about everything. And they kept saying, just coffee. Is there any coffee? And when I returned the following day, where I was became the site for the command post for the police officers. So then that evening I was I set up another place that the fire department gave me tons of clothes to give, because these guys were coming soaking wet from that hole and to do eye washing and to rinse their mouth and spit all that stuff out. And then we created a little kind of hallway in the back of by Century 21.
Yeah.
Where they could change, and they would leave that stuff and change and go. And then it began raining. They began raining about, I would say, I don't know, like probably 12 o'clock at night, and all that had become, all that dust became mud. Going, I'm telling you, and they began putting the dirt in buckets to take it out. It became mud.
Luce, You're an angel. I mean, when I say angel, I just mean, you know, whatever that word means, and I mean it for some of the professionals I know.
You know something? What I felt was empowered to go and help and not to sit and cry or to cower down, but to go and see what I could do. And that's why when on Friday, from Friday to Monday, I stayed and it was at a place called at the Charles Restaurant, and that's where I set up like a, I don't know, like a mass unit, and I used to do the ice and changing them, and I got quarters for them to rest and sleep. And those guys, they came from California, from Canada, those firemen, oh, my God. And they would say, just give me an hour sleep and wake me up. But by that time, I was able to make coffee, and some people came from some Buddhist temple somewhere, and they made sandwiches and soya hamburgers and whatever. It was such a different, it was a community that cared. And I'm so sorry that we let it go again.
Thank you, Luz. Thank you so much. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll be taking more of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. On. That's gentle enough to follow loose. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Normally with you Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays at 1 p.m. We will not be here next Tuesday because of a preemption due to some special programming from WBAI, which I am sure 9/11 and 9/12 are going to be, there's going to be broadcasting from this station that you'll hear nowhere else in the nation. It's just amazing, amazing how we've been there and stood with you through all of this time. And, you know, you've been terrified. Terrified, terrorized, terror. That word that used to mean something that happens in horror movies, you know, has suddenly become part of nomenclature, part of what people use as they talk about, I was terrified, I was terrorized, I was, that's a big thing, but you know, terrorism is not such a big thing, as Luce reminds us of what happens and how each of us have a terrifying part of us inside of ourselves that we don't like to deal with. And that there's a part of us right now, if you were to think about your life, who do you terrorize? Who do you scare? Who's afraid of you, you know? Maybe they're afraid of you emotionally. Maybe they're afraid you're gonna lose it. You're gonna get too upset. You know, maybe you're somebody who just puts yourself out there as somebody very weak and helpless and powerless, and you're gonna cry and you're gonna feel so bad, you're gonna feel suicide, and therefore they jump through hoops just to kind of take care of you. They're afraid. They're afraid you'll hurt yourself, but you scare them. Who else do you scare? Maybe you're just somebody who's a big ugly. You know, somebody who likes to beat up on people and, just tell people that they're no good and criticize them for making mistakes and, you know, talk to them in a nasty kind of way. Who do you terrify? Maybe it's people in your own family. Maybe your wife's not allowed to talk to you, afraid to talk to you. Or your husband's afraid to talk to you. Maybe you've gotten in one of those relationships where you don't talk to each other anymore because you're terrified of each other. You don't want to open the can of worms. Or maybe your kids can't tell you the truth. You know, they've got to hide it from you because it's not safe for them to tell you. We talk about what's happening in our prison camps. Many people in their families have created prison camps, terrifying each other, scaring each other for no reason. For no reason. Sometimes, you know, in my practice with the people who come to see me, sometimes I watch people who are parents. And since I feel generally loving and accepting of everybody who walks in, because I could kind of accept who they are, I do think to myself, I'm not going to see this person till next week. And between now and next week, this person, with their mind the way it is going to have to hurt their child a number of times. I wish I could stop it. I wish I could. I wish I had a way of just soothing every person that walks in so that they will never have this kind of effect on another person. You know, there's a thing about driving cars, and I have this friend who's a driver, and when I first used to drive with this friend, every time he was about to take a corner, meaning make a turn, there would be somebody who would be standing in the gutter waiting to make, you know, or standing on the sidewalk waiting to walk across the street. But they had to watch out for people making turns. And you could see the way he approached the turn that he was kind of almost into it before the people would spot him, and they would spot him, and people would look at him with terror. They'd look at the car and they'd have fear in their eyes. And I said to him, why do you scare these people? He said, well, I don't scare them. I'm just, you know, here. I'm not going to hit them or anything like that. And I said, but you see, they're scared. Well, he became a much better driver, a much more sensitive driver. As he approaches those turns, he really slows down. And he has the respect for the people who are crossing the streets. But he doesn't scare them anymore. Just a consideration. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're taking your calls, asking you about your reactions to 9/11 still as they persist. Hi, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille.
Hi, Armand. I remember that you were a great source of comfort after 9/11 because I was flipping out, I mean, big time, afraid, and I put on BAI, and you were saying, I'm not going anywhere. I'm paraphrasing. It was like this, that this is where I belong, and I want to be in my city with my people. And you spoke, and somehow it took me down a couple of notches of feeling so horrible. And that was many years ago, but I still remember the gratitude I had for you at that point. So that was a good thing. So thank you for that.
Sure. What's your name?
Flora.
Flora, thank you. Thank you for being there. You know, I really felt it. You know, I said, here's the time that everybody's scared. And that special thing about the station not being available because they lost all their electricity, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, oh, no, you can't not have WBAI.
Mm-hmm.
And they scrambled, and through their work, they were able to hook up an antenna that got it to work so that we could broadcast from up here. But I really imagined, I tried to think, you know, how could you lose this station?
Yeah.
It's the lifeblood. It's you know.
Oh, well,
so,
I was sure happy to hear
yeah.
that, you know, that you were there. And it sort of made a different relationship between us as listeners and our radio friends, so to speak, that I think it's kind of cemented something. And it's interesting. It's just interesting. It strengthened a bond as much as there can be a bond between listener and a radio person.
It's kind of like family, Flora, you know?
Yeah.
You know, it's like there is it's somewhere in there, if you've been around here long enough, and WBAI particularly, as you've watched it go through all of its changes, it's really like a family.
Right,
and when you become a part of it, when you listen to it, you feel like a family member. And sometimes you watch the kids squabble with each other,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they have fights and they have disagreements and, you know, but it still becomes a family. I agree with you.
Yes, it is. And the listeners are a family. But, anyway, the way it affected me is that I feel that maybe it's because it also happened during a midlife time for me. It kind of upped the ante on that, where I feel like that I have to really make life the way I want it, because it isn't just a given. Like, the preciousness of our ability to have a day or to have many days became really potent for me. And but now I'm kind of like over the top. It's like, if someone, like my husband, will watch a movie or something, I'll go like, how can you take time to watch a movie? Like, life is short. We have to actualize our dreams, because there isn't, you know, endless time necessarily. And I've gotten to the point where I can't just, I don't know how to say it, I can't just relax with what I had. It's like, well, don't you want different? Can't you refine your vision? Can't you make life more honoring who you are? And since in those 5 years, I've spent a whole lot of time giving that attention, and I can't really say that I've actualized it, but it's become like a, I don't know how to say it, it's like a daily taskmaster that is a mixed blessing.
Yes, it is a mixed blessing, because it becomes compulsive.
Well, it kind of is now, and I'm feeling a little almost stuck about it.
Well, I hear what you're saying. It's time for us to meet.
Yeah, maybe.
You know what I mean? It's time. I could hear. I've known a lot of people who have done that. Compulsive people before 9/11 became different kind of compulsive after 9/11. You know,
like,
and
that.
It's just, it's like the compulsion is there. And when your husband says, the quality of life is me watching a movie, you know, like a day could pass and it doesn't matter in the scope of an existential reality and time being endless and God being a piece of everything.
Mm.
You know, I mean, that's one way to look at it. That's just another way.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand. So when you find it intolerant to let time pass, it means that it has some kind of an effect on you in some little place in your brain that you don't even know it's working.
Mm.
Somebody's got your amygdala turned up.
I guess that's
we
got
to find the dimmer switch.
What the amygdala does what? What's that part?
Well, it's the part of you that's always alert, you know, always vigilant, always looking to do. It's do rather than be.
True.
So we've got to find that dimmer, and I suggest that you try to get an outside opinion on this one, because it'll help you look inside. You need somebody to hold the mirror sometimes.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Well, I appreciate
Flora, thank you.
That. And thank you again for being there. I remember those days, and you were a friend to us. Thank you.
Still am. Thank you so much. Bye-bye. 212-209-2900, Armand DeMille. We're taking your calls. Hi, let's take another call.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Oh, good. My name is Sue, and I went and benefited very, very much from an organization called World Cares. .org, World Care Center. They have two locations, one in Midtown on 8th Avenue and one in Lower Manhattan at 11 Broadway. It's also known as September Space, and they have many, many programs for free, And they're having an entire week of programs. If people go to worldcares.org, they will see all the activities, and culminating on Monday, September 11, they're having an entire day from 6 a.m., starting with a continental breakfast, gather and walk to Ground Zero site, commemoration ceremonies at the site, lunch, including relaxation and rejuvenating teas, seated yoga in a reflective art circle, and a closing meditation. They're a wonderful center. Columbia University has a program there called Cure, and I took that. It's 5 sessions and free to help develop new skills and rebuilding your own toolbox to cope with future stresses, to become a source of positive growth and developing these new skills. It's a wonderful group of people.
Thank you. What's your name?
My name is Sue.
Sue?
Sue Sky.
I'm so glad. See, you've gotten through it pretty well yourself.
I have.
The help of some friends.
Absolutely. And I'm very connected to Source. And, you know, I believe in God. And I've been fine. I've been anxious. But I'm good.
Great. Thanks for the advice. Thanks for the help.
You're so welcome.
Bye-bye, Sue.
Bye-bye. 212-209-2900.
Armand DeMille taking your calls. Hi there, you're on the air. 212-209-2900. Hello there.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Let me turn down. Yes, hello. Hello.
Yes.
Yes. Armand, this is Leora. I'm like to share something and also ask you, there are a lot of people, I think, and I may be one of them, that really never had a depth reaction to 9/11, in the sense of really sitting down and feeling and imaging the possibility if I was in the buildings or whatever. My request is, how should we really look at this in terms of a growth experience and what we can add to our own journey in lieu of this event, especially the energies are very high now coming to the date of 9/11? That's my request.
Let me ask you this much. When you watched and when you, as you see over the next few days, as you see some of the effects, because there's going to be a lot more information coming out. There was a lot of repressed information, suppressed information, mm-hmm. that's just beginning to unfold about 9/11. As you see it, and it was like as you were looking at Katrina, and you were watching some of the images of Katrina recently, I mean, does it touch your heart at all, or is it just coldly passing you by?
I don't have a TV, so I don't have that imagery.
If you hear it?
Well, I hear it. Yes, yes.
Does it touch your heart?
Yes, it does touch the... but there's so much politics involved that it gets a little fuzzy, you know? You get opinions of why the president did the...
I understand, sure. So it's an intellectual process. So here's my question to you, and it's one that... I know you're being one of our biggest fans here on the radio station. Why don't you have a TV?
I don't have a TV. Let me say it this way. I used to have X number of them. Somehow, I will say this perhaps on a spiritual level, that it's just not... It's something that I started not to have, and it just became a medium where I feel it's not adding to my growth. It's an excellent question.
What about a computer? Do you have one?
No.
Yeah, you see, so one of the things that I'm hearing about you is with, and you, again, being one of the most self-actualized people I've heard on the air, you know an awful lot about yourself, you do stay out of contact. Because the computer of all things, either the computer or the TV, is able to transmit information that you're not going to be able to hear. if you're just listening to one station. Mm-hmm. You've got to hear a lot of different stuff. And especially, I'm saying, with the Internet being available, making the whole world open, not just the politically prejudiced world, mm-hmm. there's information out there. So what I'm saying to you is, I think you and all of the wonderful work that you've done on yourself have insulated yourself. Mm-hmm. And part of what may be time to do is for you to take a walk out there in the world and to open up the world to let it come in your doors.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have another view on that.
I'm sure. So it's just a possibility.
Yeah, but I really appreciate that because I really feel, and I'll say this for the people that may not have a computer. I feel a little ashamed about it because at one time I was very electronically conscious. And, you know, it's like you're just not with it.
Well, it's not just a matter of being hip. It's a matter of shaking hands. It's a matter of being in contact. Mm-hmm. But listen, I want to be able to take another call, Leora.
Okay, yes.
All right, so thank you for calling in. 212-209-2900. No, I'm not here so that people buy microwaves and, you know, do things like that and get a car. No, but I mean, have access to the information. There is stuff that you can learn that you could never see anywhere else because the whole world is not censored yet. You know, the web isn't censored. See, you could learn things from other countries. You could have a friend sitting in somewhere in the middle of Iraq sending you emails telling you what's really going on. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello, Armand. How you doing?
Good.
Good. You know, I'll make this brief. During 9/11, it was absolutely devastating, traumatic, very horrible situation, and for the first day or so, I, like everyone else, I stood by the TV, you know, crying in shock, just horrible, and I didn't understand it until after I went through this process. I did that for 2 days, and by the third day, I don't know what made me get up. I've never volunteered in my life for pretty much anything, and I just went and volunteered, and I did, you know, in retrospect, I mean, it wasn't a huge thing, but I did something. I went and volunteered. And what I realized after I did it, I didn't plan on it happening this way. What I realized was that the moment I stood up from the couch, I was no longer a victim. I was doing something. Regardless of how small it was like a light, a switch that went off in me that now I was fighting back. I was doing something. I was part of the resolution. And I was doing something, and it made an incredible difference in how I viewed that whole thing. So it was an incredible experience for me to volunteer. It removed me from that victim mentality. Not that it's wrong. I'm just sharing what I went through.
Yeah, I hear. What's your name?
Tony.
Tony? Tony, so that was quite a moment, and you feel that moment.
Oh, totally feel it. It was, but what I'm saying is not something you could read and figure out. I only figured it out after I went through it. I was sitting there helpless, you know, like a victim. We were victimized, but the moment I stood up, it's like a switch went off, and I did my little part. It wasn't a major contribution, but I did something, and in that moment, it changed for me. Not to take away from the gravity of the situation and the pain for others, but for that moment, at least I was reacting and I was doing something, and it helped. I don't know if that makes any sense.
It does. Now, Tony, I'm glad for you, you know, and it makes all the difference in the world to be able to be a part of something. You know, thank you for calling in.
Thank you.
You know, it's such a funny thing, friends. It's like it's like we're all a part of something that's huge. And we're all a piece of it, you know. I mean, the towers and the terrorists and the government and everything that's happening, we're a part of it. It's a part of our existential self. When we ignore a piece of us has to die so that we don't feel it. So as this opportunity comes up for you to re-examine what happened during 9/11, let your tears flow. Let your mind open. Let your heart open. Don't let anger protect you. This is Armand DeMille with The Positive Mind. I will be back with you on Wednesday, the 13th of September. Please make sure to stay tuned for the September 11th and 12th at WBAI. The telephone number we found for the American Red Cross is 212-614-6383. That may still be good, or it may be another number you have to find, American Red Cross. I'll be back with you on Wednesday, my friends. Bye-bye for now.